This is Lewis.
And this is Ian.
And welcome to 101 Films You Should Have Seen.
Probably.
Hello. We're back again very soon after the last one.
And did you notice, dear listener, just how much smoother that intro was? Just because we've had that little bit more practice a little bit more recently.
We practiced it 13 times before we came on air.
Yes. Well, Lewis, you had yet another pre-podcast disaster, this time furniture falling apart.
Yeah, the leg fell off my table. Cheap IKEA rubbish.
What's
unless
going
IKEA
on?
Want to sponsor us, in which case the IKEA is just absolutely amazing. I love their furniture.
I mean, what's going on? Every time we record, something tries to sabotage us. Something tries to stop us.
This tables, microphones. I mean, you know, I've still got this annoying hiss on my microphone that I can't get rid of.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's still buzzing away. I don't know why, but, you know.
To be fair, I didn't really notice it on the last podcast. Because you edited that one, and when I listened to it, I was like, it sounds fine to me.
Good. Well, I'm glad about that one. You know, it's obviously my magic editing hands that have
magic.
I don't know what I've done it. Oh, dear. How are you? Have you seen any good films recently?
No, I've not. The last one I saw was the Seven Samurai. I've not seen anything since then.
Yeah. Do you know, I've subscribed to Mubi. Have you heard of Mubi?
No, I haven't.
I do their free trial. It's like this thing where you get 30 films. There's only 30 films on there, but each one has been handpicked, and they're all kind of like a broad range of genres and mostly kind of arty films.
Okay, I think I may have heard of this. Yeah.
Every day one is added on and one, the oldest one, is taken off.
And right.
I really like the idea because, like, I don't know about you, but I spent half my life searching for something to watch on Netflix and just going, no, 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 and then usually just turning it off. So the idea of something where it's just curated. I mean, this is the future of the internet. Curation. Wisdom rather than content, you know.
Well, you'd hope so, Lewis, but I have the opposite thing to you. I spend most of my time going on to Netflix and Amazon Prime, adding films that I go, oh yeah, I want to see that, to my list of things to watch, and never watching them. And then every so often checking the list and going, oh, they've taken that film off. So that's kind of what I do. That's how I like to spend my weekends. Just making long lists of media that I'm never actually going to consume. Well, anyway, how about you? Have you seen anything other than looking at Mubi? Have you actually watched any films on Mubi?
I watched half a film on Mubi and then it got taken off.
Excellent.
Anyway, so sometimes we do this then when we've both seen a film and we just feel like, I just want to talk about this film, usually a new film.
Yes, yes. And this time we're talking about Star Wars, The Last Jedi. It is.
You
the
say
Last
that
Jedi,
like you, you've never heard of. You're reading it off an auto cue or something.
Well, I suddenly panicked. So I thought, is it A Last Jedi
Star
or is it
Wars
The Last Jedi?
A Last Jedi?
No, it's The Last
is that
Jedi.
Right?
It's not
The Last
it's not
Jedi.
The Last Jedi.
Yeah. I kind of, you know, I've got to say, immediately I came out of it, I just felt like I wanted to go and see it again. I haven't yet, but I would really like to go and see it again. Interesting film. I feel like we should put in a spoiler warning here. So let's put in put in the old Awooga klaxon right now, because this is going to be a massively spoilery podcast. So Awooga. It's caused a lot of division among fans. There was a petition calling for it to be removed from the canon.
God.
Some people were saying, no, actually, no, just get rid of it. And say that, that's not what happened. It was like this.
Oh, my God. I don't even know what that... Oh, bloody hell.
I mean, some might say that some fans are feeling a little entitled there.
Yes.
Particularly that no one was doing those petitions when The Phantom Menace came out.
No. Do you know what struck me today? That this is the ninth Star Wars film. Isn't that insane?
Well, the ninth in the main series. There's also the spin-off.
No, it's the eighth.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
But I mean, there's been now.
We'll cut that bit out.
But yeah. We don't want to reveal that. But there's the nine Star Wars films. The tenth one, I know. Again, is one of the spin-off ones. But there's come the summer with Solo coming out, there will be 10 Star Wars films. That's weird, isn't it? When I say that, 10 Star Wars films, isn't that strange? After all, most of our childhood, up until the mid-90s, it was just three films.
Oh my
three
god, films from late I watched those 80s. Films again and again, until the VHS tapes wore out, literally wore out, because that was all we had to subsist on. And then there was all that expanded universe that was kind of trying to fill in the gaps. And everyone was desperate for more Star Wars stuff, and it just wasn't coming, and it didn't seem like it was ever going to come. And then suddenly, the gates kind of opened. But then we wanted to shut the gates because Jar Jar Binks was behind the gates. And we really didn't want to see that. But then we were kind of desperately clawing at the bits that were kind of good. The pod racing was quite good. And there's Boba Fett in it, but he's like a kid. It's kind of good.
Did you convince yourself when you came out of Phantom Menace that you had enjoyed it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Along with everyone else. It's funny, because I think The Force Awakens, when it came out, part of the 101, it's included in the canon.
We probably said all this in that podcast, we just don't remember. We said a lot of stuff.
but I mean, that was a real breath of fresh air. And I've seen it since kind of we did that podcast.
Yeah.
And it holds up. It's good. It's a good, fun Star Wars film.
Yeah.
It's very enjoyable. But The Last Jedi is very different. And for that reason, I liked it very much indeed.
Yeah.
I've got to say, I came out of that cinema thinking, wow, I want to see that again. That was a great film.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised by some of the reaction to it. Well, actually, I say I was surprised, but I could tell that if you were really expecting some stuff to happen, and I think before there was rampant kind of fan theories before the film, but I think they did a very good job of keeping what actually happened under wraps. And so when the film came out, it just seemed to take enormous pleasure in kind of presenting a circumstance that you thought might happen and then completely going in the opposite direction and doing something totally unexpected. And it did that for the whole film, and I was just overjoyed by watching it, because I was from one minute to the next, I felt like I had no idea where it was going to go. Absolutely no idea where it was going to go. And it's very rare to see that in a big blockbuster Hollywood film, because they tend to kind of run to, very generic plots,
And
yet we had whole sections of this film which were undermined by kind of one action or, big build-ups that were just kind of completely stomped flat.
Yeah.
It delighted into kind of being unexpected.
It's interesting. For me, I was actually looking forward to this one because of the mixed reviews that it had received. Because like you, I was like, oh, this sounds like then it's trying to do something. Force Awakens was enjoyable and fine, but was essentially a remake of the first Star Wars film, which I totally understood at the time why they were doing that. I completely understood and just to remind people why they liked these films. Yeah, because by that point, people had kind of forgotten why they liked Star Wars after three poor, at best, mediocre films. They really just needed to go, do you remember this was just fun and silly and exciting? And that's what Force Awakens did.
And Han Solo and Chewbacca.
Exactly, yeah. Bringing the old gang back. But this one, I felt there were moments where it was fantastic and I felt there were moments where it was quite poor. Mm. And overall, good. But I totally agree. It was refreshing to have my expectations subverted and to be surprised by what was happening. That was a really nice thing. Especially as Star Wars, it's quite a stat. Yeah, in many ways, because it's always been there as part of our lives, it's quite stale. And the prequels are very stale because they were prequels and you knew where that story had to go. So there was no kind of feeling of surprise at all. So this is the first time where really we're being sort of, oh, anything could happen. And that was good. The problem I found was that it did that so often that it. Those constant reversals started to become a little bit samey and meaningless, and the impact was diluted as the film went on. I think they would have probably been better focusing on one or two reversals, because the weight of just one or two of those happening would have been much more keenly felt if the rest of the film had perhaps had a slightly more predictable plot line. Those then would have stood out, and you know, if you think about a film like. Like say Empire Strikes Back, which you know this has often been, you know, this was kind of being compared to before it was released as the middle one of a trilogy, but that had two big standout twists. The Luke finding out Vader is his father, spoiler alert, and then Han Solo being taken off, being captured and put in the carbonite.
Well, yes, I mean,
those two, they were that was really surprising. But because the film had sort of had a certain pattern to it beforehand, don't get me wrong, I don't mind things that are predictable as long as they're done with a bit of panache and and interesting and emotional, exciting. Whereas I think this one, it just because every time, weirdly, do you know what it reminded me of was in Red Dead Redemption, the video game. Pretty much every single thing you do, even if you're trying to do the good thing, it then there's a sting at the end which shows that even if you try to do the good thing, it's just some shit anyway. And and after a while, because every time you did that, it just did it anyway, the surprise of that was diluted. And I felt that was the issue in this film. There was too many, oh, we're going to do this. And, oh, no, you thought this was going to happen. And by the end, I was just like, all right. Oh, okay. All right. Another.
Yeah,
And
I think
it took away
you've
some
got a
of
good
that.
point there. I mean, yeah, it's true. Yeah, it did that all the way through the film, which is kind of why I liked it. But I could also see that it did kind of like, you know, become, you could argue it became, I don't feel it became repetitive for me, but like I could see why you would think that. But before we talk about anything else, we should talk about Luke downing some blue milk.
See, I love that. That film
is
brilliant.
The teat of a sea monster. Right from the teat. He just went straight in there with his bottle and got it right out of that teat. And you know what? My favourite thing was all that milk on his beard. And he just wiped his hand across and there was all that milk on his beard.
See, I like that because I think actually that's what, weirdly, that is a very Star Wars-y thing in the sense that it's a kind of, the whole appeal of those first three films was the fact that they had, it was lived in. The universe was like, it was mad and science fictiony, and there was laser swords and spaceships and bad guys and good guys, but it felt rough around the edges. You could imagine people, moving around, living in those things. And that's why I like that.
Yeah.
And that weirdly, Luke just getting milk, it was like, because people. Yeah, it's like they're on a farm. It is a bit rough. It is a bit muddy. It is a bit grim. And that's where you get milk from an animal. So I quite like that. I like that.
I liked it as well. I liked it. I mean, it did raise a lot of questions. I mean,
indeed.
For a start, I noticed the milk wasn't. It was kind of green. It wasn't blue. It was kind of green. But then that would kind of make sense. Because there were kind of sea monsters there, and there wouldn't have been any sea monsters on Tatooine unless
that's
they'd imported
true,
the milk from.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So maybe this is a different milk, but it's still a throwback to the blue milk.
Yeah.
I mean, that's important.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that is important. That's the main.
And perhaps because of that, we haven't actually seen what creature the blue milk comes from yet. Maybe in the next film, and this is what I'm hoping, that Rey will take up. We'll pick in much the same way that she, you know, Princess Leia received Han's golden dice from the Millennium Falcon given to her by Luke. In the next film, we'll see Rey just gingerly pick up Luke's now filthy beaker and milk some sort of horrendous giraffe-faced monster and then slurp down this blue milk and wipe her face in kind of a tribute to her now fallen master.
And we will finally get the reference, or finally understand what George Lucas meant by the Blue Harvest title. So that's what it is, harvesting blue milk. That was what it was.
And so we come full circle.
So other than milking kind of cow-like monsters, what stood out?
Well, first, before we talk about the good bits, I think we should talk about the
bad bits.
Bad bits, or possibly confusing and slightly alarming bits. And mentioned before we talked about this, about the opening scene.
Oh yes, yeah. My heart did sink in the opening scene.
I had the same reaction, because suddenly it cut to Adrian Edmondson on the
big
deck
ship.
Of the Star Destroyer,
yeah,
or whatever they're called now, and I was like, oh, and then it's Adrian Edmondson, it's From Bottom, and I was like, and I'm kind of pleased as well. Noticed his uniform was a little tight fitting nowadays, but you know, immediately I was taken back to Glastonbury Festival and watching him perform in his skiffle band. So that took me out of the Star Wars universe a little bit.
Yes. I like the fact that you went straight to him performing skiffle rather than the Young Ones or Bottom. You went to him performing skiffle.
Straight to skiffle. And then there was bizarre conversation between Poe Dameron and Hux.
Yeah.
Which kind of was... It wrong-footed me, but in completely the wrong way, you know.
Yeah, because, it fell really flat and just didn't... The tone was not right. I've got absolutely no problem at all with having, you know, jokes and humour in Star Wars, but that just didn't... It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel right.
It was just kind of like ended up... I don't know. It was all just... It felt a bit too... I don't know, it just didn't fit with the Star Wars universe. You know, you're going with something...
No, it just didn't fit, no.
And it felt like a comedy sketch. And it's not a comedy sketch, it's about one-liners and kind of, you know, just humour in the face of adversity, not just doing comedy sketch jokes.
And I think sticking... You mentioned Hux there, I think one of the mistakes this film made, in my humble opinion, the mistakes this film made is that it really did not build Hux up at all as a credible threat. It undermined him at every point, and he just seemed ridiculous. And at the end of that film, where you have, you know, now there is no big emperor, he's gone, so you're relying on Kylo Ren and Hux as the two villains. And Kylo Ren just seems like a petulant child, and Hux just seems like a sort of out of his depth, slightly watery. Yeah, like neither of them are particularly.
To be honest, I kind of feel like that setting up Kylo Ren as now becoming like the master of this empire was just a brilliant move, because he is a petulant child. He is essentially just got anger management issues, and is incredibly, you know, insecure.
Impulsive.
And who else do we know who's like that, that is currently President of the United States?
Oh, yeah, well, yes.
I think that is a more dangerous villain than any kind of, like, Machiavellian kind of, like, supervillain, because he's unpredictable and you don't know what's going to happen. But I totally agree with you on General Hux, because I felt this film constantly undermined him, almost setting up as the comic stooge to kind of Kylo Ren, you know, rolling his eyes in the corner. And it's so I felt like he is consequently less scary, consequently less interesting as a character.
Do you know, my one of my favourite characters in this film was a character who literally appeared on screen for about a minute, and it was where they're kind of, I can't quite remember. There's a sequence where there's a few different Star Destroyers and they're chasing the rebels, and Oh, yeah, maybe it's at the beginning bit, and the one ship comes in, they start to bomb them, and it cuts the other guy, and he's like, "We should have launched the fighters like 5 minutes ago," and he's really pissed off that this is being just really badly managed, and he felt the most kind of real character in all of that. Like he just seemed like a competent Empire general who was just like, "Oh, for crap, why aren't we doing it yet?" And that he really rung true as like a proper character. I just I think the Hux thing, I think, is gonna come back to bite them a bit in the next film, because he just was ludicrous. What you kind of wanted, and what would have been more interesting? Well, I know we are. Perhaps this is where we're getting to that area where we're kind of like, just enjoy the film as it is, and rather than the film that it isn't. And I think you're like, why didn't they do that? Why didn't they do this? But to me, like, Hux should have been more like Peter Cushing's character in the first one, in Star Wars: A New Hope. Yeah, he should have had been like efficient, cold, and then you'd have had that real. And an interesting tension in a way between like in a sort of very efficient, cold way the Empire could go, or the Kylo Ren way. And actually, that could have been sort of a, and I'm sure they'll kind of use this in the third film, but that's really fascinating, isn't it? Like the Empire, I know the Emperor was this Jedi
Well,
man, but it doesn't have to be.
yeah,
There's
the First
no
Order.
reason.
It's not the Empire anymore, it's the First Order.
Exactly,
I
yeah,
should
or
point that
whatever.
out, because there'd be Star
Yeah,
Wars
I know.
fans screaming at the.
But you know what I mean? Like, actually, that would have been fascinating. Like, there's two ways it could be down the kind of mystical road, and that's in that for in for the first Star Wars. That it feels like there's this real kind of like, because doesn't like, Peter Cushing's character say something like, "Stop using your magic here," like that
Well,
superstition
yes.
here, yeah,
Or,
and
yeah,
that
that
was
ancient
much more,
religion,
yeah, exactly, and that's I found that I think that's a much more interesting tension within the kind of villainous group. Like, yes, they're both bad guys, but one is like a military man, and one is a kind of
Also, Peter Cushing
magic
is just
mad.
scary.
Yeah, well, there is that, and I think that. But that Hux guy, the actor, I can't remember his name now, but he's a good actor. I think he could have carried. And I don't. In Force Awakens, I remember him being a bit more. Yes, slightly boyish looking, but that's what I was. Again, don't be disappointed that your expectations don't happen. But I really thought he would be perhaps just a little bit more confident and a little bit more, like a proper general. It just, I just didn't understand why they undermined him so much. I think that was a.
Yeah, I agree. I think they took it a bit too far in that. But we talked a lot about the bad things. What about the good
Yeah.
things about this film?
Well, I mentioned the guy said they should have lost just 5 minutes
Well,
ago.
actually,
He was very
on
good.
that note, I think the film did a really good job of actually showing what a rebellion would be like.
Yeah.
In the sense that it's fragmented, there's
Yeah,
people
yeah.
that wouldn't normally kind of work together, and they're kind of like just thrown in, trying to fight something much bigger than them. It's a very,
Yeah.
it's quite a good simulacrum of kind of the left wing in the sense that it's eternally fragmented. And one of the things that I really liked about it was that you had that mission in the middle where people were decided, right, well, they're not doing it right, so we're going to do it for ourselves, and we're going to do it,
Yeah.
and we don't believe in the leadership, so we're going to go off and we're essentially a rebellion in the rebellion is what
Yeah,
happened.
yeah,
And of
yeah.
course, the big overarching kind of parable of it, the story was that the idea of acting alone will only harm the group, and you should the only way to kind of to get the desired result is to work together.
That's one way of looking at it, or that you should obey authority at all times because they do know best, even if they don't tell you. That's the
Well,
other way to look
yes,
at that.
that
So.
is the other way to look at it, but
And I
yes.
did find that slightly weird. I did just think, why didn't you just tell him? I mean, like, there's like 400 of them. That Poe Dameron must be a very senior person in the Rebellion. Why didn't you just tell him? It just
Yeah, I
didn't.
mean, you make a good point.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
found that
so
very odd.
I mean, to recap for I'm assuming you've seen the film, but we're talking about the bit
Yes.
where kind of Laura Dern's character, whose name I forget in the film,
Yeah.
takes over from Princess Leia after she's had her kind of outdoor walk, and then just says to Poe Dameron, "Just shut the fuck up and get in line," without saying, "Actually, we've got a plan."
Yeah,
But then
it's okay.
it's fine,
Because
she's like,
she,
"What are you
yeah.
gonna do?" And she's like, and she just kind of stays silent rather than saying, "Well, actually, we've we've got it covered, don't worry.
Yeah, exactly. Or like, she could have still said, like, there is a plan, don't disrespect me, I know what I'm doing. Yeah. But she did say nothing. Also, why wasn't that General Akbar? Why wasn't it just him? Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, I to be honest, I struggled to follow exactly what happened there, but I have a feeling General Akbar got killed.
He died, yeah.
He died.
Yeah, he died in that first thing. An off-screen death, essentially.
Yeah, which I thought was a little of an ignominious way for the character to go. But again, par for the course in this film. You know, which is...
I know.
But, I mean, speaking of which, I mean, Princess Leia. I mean, I was like, right, well, that's how they've written her out now, you know, obviously, because Carrie Fisher's dying.
Oh, yes.
And I was like,
yeah.
That's how they've written her out. You know, it's kind of, it was quite a good, I liked the way, you know, Kylo Ren was lining up the shot and he couldn't make it and then someone else did it.
Yeah.
You know, and it was kind of, that was a really great thing. And then she bloody woke up and became this kind of, this space witch that walked back into the ship. And I mean, at that point, my eyes were like about, my eyes were just about 3 inches wide. I was just kind of like staring at the screen going, what the hell is happening here?
Yeah, I was a bit like, what? I was very confused at that point. Yeah. I was like, what?
But
a bit late. I've got to say,
I was lapping up. I was just like, this film could not defy my expectations anymore at this point. You know, when apparently Leia can survive in the vacuum of space. I mean, why not?
It's a shame, really, that, I don't know, if they'd known this had been Carrie Fisher's last film, whether instead of Laura Dern, you know, steering that ship into the other ship, it would have been Leia. Wouldn't that have been a really fantastic end to that character? Yeah. Of her just going, I've spent all my life fighting these bastards, I'm just, now, this is it, my last thing. It's like, forever the rebellion. Yeah, and that would have been such a great... Because she was always, that's the thing about Leia, she was always like a proactive, aggressive, I'll do it kind of character. And I think that would have been a fantastic fit. And then obviously they didn't realise that. They were saving her up for the last one. But
Well, they've said that she's not going to be in the next one, so God knows how they're going to write her up.
I suspect they'll set it 5 years after or something. Time would have gone. There would have been a bit of a gap, and they'll sort of say, there'll be some kind of little bit where they'll have a memorial for her, or say, it was a year ago today that Princess Leia died in the battle of blah blah blah, and everyone will be like, oh yeah, it was really sad. She's like, she gave her, and some character will motivate the other characters by going, remember Leia gave her life, so this could help, or we should do this, something like that. It'll be like that,
I mean, there was a point where I was, it felt like there were a couple, like you said, there's a couple of points where it would have been perfect for her character to kind of...
Yeah, obviously they didn't know she was not going to be there for the next...
But speaking of that light speed kind of destruction of the ships, accelerating the ship, I mean, that was brilliant, wasn't it? Oh my God, that was cool. I was just like... That's what happens when ships hit each other at light speed. And it's something, I don't know about you, but it's something I've always wondered. He's like, well, they're always going into light speed. What happens if they hit something? That's what happens, a fucking massive explosion.
I know some people have said, like, oh, well, why don't they always do that? I'm like, well, I mean, one, you could, it's Star Wars. Don't look at it like a serious war film. And two, if you really want a reason, it's quite... a lot of resources to build a ship that big and then just crash it into another one. So that's why. They don't build those ships quickly. That was their like one battle cruiser or whatever.
I imagine they're not cheap.
No, exactly.
I've noticed they're still using the same ones from the previous film as well. You know, the First Order's got these fancy new ships.
Yes, yeah.
And they're still knocking around in the old medical frigate from the Return of the Jedi. And you're like, I think times are tight.
So, how did you feel? I mean, we've not really talked about any of the characters, other than the man that says launch those ships 5 minutes ago.
We've just talked about the important things, and that's blue milk.
That's true.
Hux.
Some of the big controversy has been about Luke's betrayal in this.
I think I just didn't know what to make of it half the time, to be honest. I'll be honest, I was like, I have no... When you first see him and he just lobs the lightsaber over his shoulder, I was like, wow, I didn't expect that. that was.
Do you know? Funny enough, I kind of it was, I for most of the film I thought he was doing a Yoda, just like Yoda acted really stupid and like you know at the beginning and then revealed his wisdom. For the first half, I just presumed he was doing that to sort of test Rey and you know like is this was part of the training, and it was only sort of so for most of it like I wasn't that bothered by it because I just presumed it was him pretending, and it was only then it kind of got to a point where I was like. Oh, he's not. Oh, right. He wasn't pretending then. Oh, okay. That's all right. But
well, I mean, I don't know. What I was watching, I was feeling. You know, I kind of had it before going to see the film. I had it in my head that Luke would essentially become the new Jedi Master character. You know, maybe he'd be a little reluctant to train Rey at first, but then he'd relent, and you know, she'd be the new kind of. You know, and essentially he would become the Yoda role. And then it kind of didn't really work like that. And it was like, he was just incredibly, he didn't want to do it. You know, he was done with the Jedi. He wanted to leave them. And you know, he wanted to put the whole thing behind him.
And then there's
that lovely moment at the end when, you know, he goes to burn the Jedi books and he's like, I'm done with this. I'm done with this. You know, this doesn't kind of like work. And it ended up, Yoda ended up doing it for him. But did he know that that Rey had already stolen the Jedi books? We don't know. But yeah, I mean, it kind of shows Luke as someone who's not really sure. He doesn't really know what he's doing, and I think that was quite refreshing, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that was like he's making it up as he goes along, just the same as all of us are making it up as we go along, you know. So, you know, I kind of warmed to it after a while. At first, I was a bit confused, and then I was like, actually, no, this kind of makes sense. You know, he's made a massive fuck up. He's become something he hates. You know, he ended up to the point where he was going to murder, on the brink of murdering one of his students in his sleep. You know, and then he was like, "What the hell am I doing?" And then, of course, all the horrendousness that came after that, and you know, he's like, "Actually, it's better if I don't do anything."
Yeah.
It totally makes sense. It totally makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. No, I must be honest. I liked the fact that he was there is a little bit of sadness in me that. You watch, you know, Return of the Jedi and you see them all young and going, yay, everything's great, we've won. And you cut, you know, now you watch these films and Han Solo broke up with Leia, his son murdered him, and even before that, he was back to smuggling. Luke lives by himself on a tiny planet.
For a second
and Leia,
I thought you said back to snuggling, and I was...
I was next to that. And Leia is, you know, still fighting this fight that she's been fighting all her life, and by the end... there's only 400 of them. Not even 400, there's about 30 of them left on the Millennium Falcon. You're like, bloody hell.
And then slightly depressing. And then no help's coming as well. That's the other
exactly,
thing. You know, the other, you know, they call for help and no one comes. You know, it's like, God, this is awful.
Sorry to bring up, it's a lot easier to talk about the weaknesses than the strengths. What I felt like the other weakness was that big side trip to the casino world, I thought.
Ah, well, do you know what? I completely disagree with you there. And I thought
that... I thought that was a waste of time.
The casino thing was just essentially a red herring, you know.
Yeah.
But it was just brilliantly done, and I really enjoyed it. Yeah. And more importantly, it introduced DJ, who's played by Garcia del Toro, who was a brilliant character, and I think one of the best in the film. And I think he really lit up the screen when he was on. You know, he was. It was fantastic. I mean, one of the themes that was really heightened in this film is that there's no black and white. There's only grey, and his character was the perfect embodiment of the grey. You know, he kind of says, you know, he sells. You know, he was looking through the he steals that ship, and then there's the data on it showing that the arms dealer was selling arms to both the First Order and to the rebels. And you know, it just goes to show there's no black or white, and I think that's a theme that was really taken up by the film, and it's a theme that I really came away with when I finished watching it, and particularly with Rey and Kylo Ren, because you know with Rey, you know when Luke undertakes her training, you know he says he went straight to the dark side. She immediately goes to go and. Is drawn to this dark side cave, and suddenly it's not so simple as oh well, Rey's the good hero, and it's like well actually she's got all this anger and you know she's maybe she's not so good, but then maybe she's not so bad either. Maybe she's just something in the middle.
No, I think that's quite refreshing. I just found it quite boring. that's my ultimate death.
You're talking about the casino thing, in story terms,
I totally understand what you're saying, and I think yes, they're perhaps thematically they felt they had to go there, but yeah. I just found it all very dull.
Well, what I was pleased about was that Trico from The Last Guardian turned up with his herd.
Yeah. And I found it very, one thing I saw in a review, which I totally was like, oh yeah, that kind of puts a finger on something I felt. It felt like a collection of B-plots I wasn't quite sure which was the main story out of those stories. What was the one we were supposed to be mostly invested in, with the others as just sidelight plots?
You've got a point there. For the first half hour of the film, I was like, I don't know where this is going. I don't know what's the main plot. And it kind of gradually, eventually, kind of sagged into, okay, well, it's just basically a massive slow motion chase through space. And that's the main thing. And then you've got this thing going on with Luke in the other side of the universe or galaxy.
Maybe it'll make more, it'll feel a little bit clearer once the next one's out.
It's true. And I really want to kind of watch this one again, because I feel like there's a lot of stuff that I didn't really pick up on the first time around that I really like to see again. I think my major thing that I really liked about it was the developing relationship between Rey and Kylo Ren, and the way those two characters aren't being set up as simple.
Yeah,
he's
bad,
I
did like that as well.
She's good.
At one point towards the end, I genuinely wasn't sure if he was going to cross over to her or she was going to cross over to him, and the next one would be about, you know, if he had gone over to the Resistance, whether they could trust him, or if she had joined him, would eventually she go back to the light side, or would she become disillusioned? Yeah. And I thought at one point they were going to go with that. I thought, that's a really fascinating idea.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's it. I mean, that's it. I mean, there was that point it felt like it could go either way, which I never thought I felt like I'd say in a Star Wars film.
I did like the fact they killed that replacement emperor bloke, because it did seem a bit pointless. Yeah, like in a weird way I was like, another misshapen man. It just seemed a bit okay. That was quite nice that they just were like, that doesn't matter. That was something we felt we had to have in The Force Awakens, because we felt we needed an emperor type character. We've done away with that now. And I was like,
I liked that bit with Stoke. That was a really good scene. And, you know, it's always satisfying to see a villain at the height of his hubris being cut down, you know.
And I think, I'm going to say as well, it's interesting that you like this so much, because you were not a fan of this director, were you? And this is very much his work.
Well, Rian Johnson, like, yes. I've hated all of his films.
Yeah.
Except this one, which I actually really like. Brick. I mean, famously, we really didn't like Brick at all.
Yeah, we didn't like Brick. And you liked it, disliked it a lot more than I disliked. I didn't like it, you hated it.
It was awful. And Looper, and you liked, I hated.
Yeah, I thought Looper's fine.
Well, I wouldn't say hated, that's too strong a word, but I certainly didn't like it very much. When I heard Rian Johnson was going to be directing this one, I was like...
And writing it. He wrote and
Yeah, and writing it.
It is his own baby. It really is.
That's it.
And interestingly, I think last year or something, someone said, I'm guessing that there were several story beats you had to hit to fit in with the grand story plan of these films. And he's like, no, I could do whatever I wanted.
I mean, really surprises me, especially with Disney in charge. I kind of assumed that they had a broad plan, you know, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe does, for kind of, you know, where things are going to go to, you know.
And also the fact what happened to Rogue One and Solo were massively re-edited and you know, bits chopped out and directors sacked and all sorts. So it feels like that, you know, you kind of got the feeling that they had a very rigid formula they wanted to follow. So it seems so surprising that they allowed him, from the sounds of it, a lot of freedom to decide where to take the story next.
Yeah, no, I was very surprised by that. Whether, I don't know whether it's true. I don't know how much free rein he really had, but certainly,
Weirdly,
judging by the film, it certainly seems that he's
yes,
kind of
exactly. It
like,
feels true, doesn't it? It feels that it really was him going, looking at the J.J. Abrams film and go, which bits of this do I not like? Well, I don't like that bit, and I don't like that bit, so I'm going to just ignore that bit and I'll change. I mean,
one,
it was
actually,
really startling
speaking
for
of
Kylo Ren to get rid of his helmet right at the beginning.
Yeah, the helmet. There was a funny Twitter meme with someone talking about that. It's like opening frame of Star Wars, J.J. Abrams directing Star Wars Episode 9. Kylo appears with his helmet on. Actually, I decided I really like my helmet, so I made a new one.
Well, it does make you wonder if any. I mean, and then, oh, it turns out Rey's does have special parents, and it's yeah, like, Snoke wasn't dead. He's clambers back up.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Rey's parents, I thought that was a wonderful revelation. I mean, Rian
yes,
Johnson
I did
said
like
in
that
an interview
as well.
Where he said, you know, that hearing that, because people have been going wild speculating who's Rey's parents were and how possibly they were related to Obi-Wan and all this kind of stuff, or Luke Skywalker, and Rian Johnson said, you know, the worst thing she could possibly hear at the time was that she was essentially nothing. You know, she came from her parents were just drunks who sold her. You know, and I totally agree. You know, and I felt that at the time.
I really like that. I dislike it when films like of that nature end up going down essentially an aristocratic route where everyone has to be related in some way.
Exactly, and it also you know the idea of a family being sensitive to the Force is inherently creating some sort of monarchy, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
just kind of like, well, we're the special ones because we've inherited this power, and you know everyone else doesn't have Jedi powers.
No,
and yet
I
the
really,
film went out of the way to show that that's not true, you know, and that the, you know, especially ending with the kid, who the little kid, essentially, I presume a slave child or something like that, just you know, force wielding a broom at the end, you know.
Well, and, is that cause it's interesting you say that because I thought I saw that and I've not seen that mentioned anywhere else. So I thought maybe I imagined it or he just.
He used the Force to pick it up, you know.
That's really interesting, yeah. Because I was surprised the fact that no one talked about that. I've not seen. You're the first person to have mentioned that. No, I've not seen any other reference to that.
Well, no, I definitely didn't just see it. Well, for a start, you saw it, but I have read some bits about it, and I thought it was a lovely touch. It was really
exactly.
It was showing it's actually well, you know, this is a grassroots rebellion. There's a lot of oppressed people. You know, there's a lot of people who can use the
like
Force, and it also the Force isn't just some elitist thing.
Yes,
you know, not made of bloody midichlorians. But that's a conversation for another day, I feel.
Yes, indeed. So where do you think this is going to go? What do you think in the third one? I mean, I think we made several predictions when we did Force Awakens about this one. So let's finish this by talking about where we think this story is going to go.
I feel like there's going to be a marriage, whether it's between Poe Dameron and Finn or Rey and Kylo Ren. I don't know, but one of the two.
BB-8 and R2-D2 going to finally get married.
How about you?
I do think the film will open several years after this one is finished. I think that's how they're going to get around the Leia thing, the very sad absence of Carrie Fisher. And also I think because they just started it on with, you know, ended this with such a small number of actual rebels left, I think the next one will start a few years later where they've perhaps managed to build up a bit of a power base, or there's resistance cells, you know, scattered across everywhere where they sort of, you know, they're going to have to, I mean, they're not going to do it in the next one. They're not going to have no X-Wings. So they're going to have to bring the X-Wings. They're going to have X-Wings at some point. So something will,
I have a feeling that kind of Rey will end up gaining a kind of cult following amongst the thing. I mean, that seemed to be the thing that the end of this film was building towards, you know, like.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, the whole idea of finding Luke was, you know, we need a figurehead. We need someone to inspire hope.
Yeah,
and the way the film goes, it kind of like shows that Rey could be that person, especially with her essentially doing a parting of the Red Sea at the end, you know, with, yeah, with all the, yeah, rocks. Yeah, yeah. So I wonder whether that might be the kind of spur for the next one, whether, you know, Rey's essentially become like a almost a Jesus type figure that's kind of,
yeah,
sent as a savior that could, you know, save the oppressed people. I wonder whether that will go, and I wonder, yeah, how Kylo will develop. I'm intrigued.
Well, surely, oh, yeah, when Luke at the end says, "See you around, kid," he's going to be appearing as a Force ghost.
Oh, out. My God.
I suspect it will be a bit like that when Fred Flintstone had that little green alien that called him Dum Dum. So every so often, Luke would appear to Kylo Ren and go, "Come on, Dum Dum."
I love that. If a kind of like just a tiny Luke with a massive head. Yeah. Just swigging from a blue milk canteen.
But I think that will be, Luke will appear, and I think that will be really, Luke will almost be his conscience, almost saying, "Why are you doing this? You're better, yeah, than this." Yeah, like you have
that would be good. Potential. I would enjoy that. It was my mistake. Very much.
I think I can see that happening. Yeah. Because I think the next one, because it's J.J. Abrams, will be a bit more predictable than this song. So I think yeah, probably with a better chance of guessing where this is going to,
yeah,
go.
Yeah, that's true. And I wonder whether this film will stand out as quite an anomaly in the Star Wars. Yeah. But having said that, Rogue One also defied my expectations in some way. It feels like it's a really healthy regeneration of the Star Wars series. And I feel like these films will be looked back on quite fondly. Even though they kind of caused a lot of outcry. Because, to be honest, have you ever seen that caused outcry and then when everyone looked back on it and thought, actually, yeah, it was worse than we thought?
I wonder how Empire Strikes Back was seen at the time. I'd be interested. I don't really know. I wonder if that was a bit controversial. Mm. Yeah, everyone going, "Oh, it's depressing and downbeat," and without knowing where it was going to end, perhaps that was also seen as a bit like, that's not great. Happy endings all around.
It's certainly surprising at the time, isn't it?
I think one thing I am unsure of, do you think they'll finish this in the next one? Will the story finish in quite the same way as Return of the Jedi finished? You know, obviously it wasn't, but at the end of Return of the Jedi, it did feel like the Resistance had won, there's going to be a new Republic, and the Empire's done and dusted. Do you think the next film will end with the First Order being wiped out and a new Republic being set up? Yeah, are they just going to keep doing these films? Because
They've already signed. I've heard they've already signed up Rian Johnson to do the next trilogy, haven't they? They've already talked about, you know, doing another trilogy after this. So it's not really a trilogy anymore. It's just a soap. But, you know,
I mean, how many stories are you going to have in terms of these large-scale stories between essentially just two sides? Is it always going to be they're never going to quite... Is it always going to be the Empire and or the New Order or whatever you call them? And is it always going to be the Republic, the Resistance, whatever you call them? Because, I mean, I can...
Well,
I
no,
can,
not necessarily. I mean, can, you know, there's a lot of stories in the Star Wars universe. And I think that... A lot of them aren't canon anymore, but I mean,
yeah, I mean,
I think that thing, one of the most interesting things that kind of came up was like there's a faction of the early Jedi, like thousands of years before these films, that were essentially the Grey Jedi, that were that believed in a balance of bad and good, and that no one was truly bad and no one was truly evil, and you know they didn't really believe in the Sith and the Jedi. It was just, you know, the grey, you know, the middle ground. Yeah. And, you know, you could see some sort of kind of third force appearing, or maybe this kind of...
Yeah, but that will end the films, I don't know. What I'm trying to say is, like, it feels, when you actually think about it, it's quite restrictive in a way, because you can have lots of the standalone ones. Don't get, like, you could do thousands of those. You could do a standalone film which set on an Empire world where it's a resistance cell, a bit like the French Resistance. You could do a standalone film where it was like Battleship Potemkin. You could do a standalone film which is like the Battle of Britain, but of Star Wars. You could do thousands of war films set in the Star Wars universe. And you could do a heist film like Rogue One kind of was, but quite wasn't. You could do, you know, certain characters like the Solo films. Yeah. You can do all those standalone films, but the sort of the trilogy where the trilogy films are always about massive shifts in the kind of the overall universe, you know, power changes. And, you know, it basically, at the end of each trilogy, it's going to look like the good guys have won, and the next trilogy will start going, ah, but they didn't.
Yeah. And the Empire right.
That feels like that they can only do so many of those before that just becomes meaningless. Do you know what I mean? Like, that feels like that has a sort of inbuilt staleness to it, whereas I totally, I can see you could do hundreds of standalone films, but those kind of big trilogy ones, which are supposed to
shifts. So I guess the only option is whether to, at the end of the next film, have a situation where they don't really triumph, where they perhaps,
but won't that ultimately be, or
the other option would be to introduce a third party, an external force, an external threat that could possibly end up forcing Daleks. But, you know, I'm thinking of Mass Effect here, you know, the Mass Effect games where you have a kind of galaxy-threatening kind of force that kind of arrives. I mean, you're right. I mean, you do end up kind of like having the, you know, we're going to go over the same old ground again. Oh, the Empire's exactly, back again, but now they've got slightly different outfits. You know,
the Death Star is even bigger this time. Oh yeah, it's a XXXXX wing. It's kind of, it's got six X's. Yeah, like what the
a triple X wing. I'd like
triple XX. But you know, But to be fair though, I think Disney they want to make money off this. But Disney, whatever you say about them, they do tend to try and think of interesting, inventive way. The story is at the heart of most of what Disney does. And when you look at those Marvel films, everyone slags them off, and everyone's like, well, yeah, but they are enjoyable, they're well structured, they're well crafted. Yes, there is a formula to them.
You only have to compare them to the Warner Brothers DC films just how good they are, you know, and how good a job they've done. You know, the fact that they got Rian Johnson for the director of The Last Jedi, relatively. Kind of unknown director, and they got Gareth Edwards to do Rogue One. You know, these are mostly kind of indie directors, and they're really kind of like trying to do something different. And especially with Rogue One, I mean, the ending to Rogue One, my God, it's trying to push the boundaries. You know, and I really appreciate that. And I don't think anyone who's ever tried to push the boundaries has ever regretted it. So I think.
Perhaps they'll just do. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think you could get. There's a lot of films, a lot of those standalone side films you could do set in Star Wars universe, at any point in Star Wars universe, where you just take kind of famous, almost war situations or. Yeah, you could do a version of Casablanca, but set in the Star Wars universe. You could, it would be really easy to. Do that, you could do. There are so many stories you can tell within that setup, and just use the essentially set dressing of a Star Wars thing. But it will be interesting to see how they, or what they will do in terms of those kind of big shifts.
Well, I wonder whether they'll take it right back, because I mean, you've had games set in the Old Republic,
meaningless to most people, though.
You know, I wonder whether that could be a get out clause. You know, it's like, right, actually, we're getting way back.
Yeah. Do you think they'll blow up the Millennium Falcon in the next one?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. That ship's going.
Because it feels like they're getting rid of every sacred cow. Solo, sadly, Leia's gone. Luke's gone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and...
I'd say that if all of the predictions for the next film, I'd say that is the one that's probably the most likely to happen. Sad though. I did like like its new dish.
I did. I just found it strange that when they landed on Luke's planet, that R2-D2 didn't get off the ship to say hello to. He just stayed on there until Luke got on the ship. And then hello.
He's got wheels. It's a bit bumpy.
He's got thrusters. He's got those rockets we've seen but he from Attack he of the Clones. Them.
He only had them for a bit in the prequels. I mean, you forgot he had them for the whole of the episodes 4, 5, and 6. Maybe they stopped working.
Perhaps they stopped working, at some point. Yeah, that's true.
Got a bit of twig in them or something.
Well, I think we've talked about this for at the moment, once we've edited this down, it won't be an hour, but as it stands, it's about an hour.
Basically, we've been banging on like two old pissed men.
Yes.
And now it's time to stop.
Now it's time to stop and save our energy for. So I hope, dear listener, that you enjoyed our rambly ramble about. I mean, it wasn't particularly organised. It was just a collection of thoughts said in a very random order. But yeah, that's things that struck us. Just before I go, I would recommend watching the Red Letter Media review of this on YouTube of Last Jedi. They were. They weren't particularly impressed by it, but some of the points they made were really interesting, and it's certainly it's certainly worth a watch. And they're the guys who did the basically hour and a half reviews of each of the prequel films, where they bit by bit dismantle them and show exactly why they don't function or work as entertainment or films.
They sound like really fun guys to be around.
Oh, they. I mean, yeah, it is, and they, you know, they freely admit how ridiculous they are. But yeah, it's definitely worth a watch, because it's interesting what they say. It's interesting what that. As I say, they're a little bit critical.
Well, I for one quite enjoy it. I would definitely recommend watching this film.
Weirdly, they say like a lot of it is good, but yeah they do.
I feel like it deserves. I want to see it again. It'd be interesting to see what I feel like about this film in a year's time or 2 years' time. You know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I probably won't watch it until I sit down with my son in about 6 years' time, and we kind of watch all of them one by one over the course of 6 months or something. Because by that point, there'll be about 30 Star Wars films.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, if you've got any films you'd like us to see or we'll talk about in the podcast, please write to us at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen@gmail.com.
And of course, follow our various social media accounts. You can like our Facebook page, 101 Films, and follow us on Twitter, 101 Films.
And check out our blog at 101filmsyoushouldhaveseen.com.
Yay!
And that's it. Yay! Yes. Okay, till next time. Bye!
I don't know what we're going to do, Lewis.
What are we going to do with all the media?